This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Now, this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you with the assistance of Steve Dow today. Now, I've just got a message here forwarded by Shannon Power, who's one of our newsreaders. She's got a message from inside the barricades at City Square. It's hard to call right now, but as an update, the police who've taken off their badges have destroyed a lot of the camp, including ripping down the Indigenous tent. They have surrounded us and are kettling us in. Hundreds of extra supporters have gathered who they refuse to allow in, so they are occupying the streets around us in solidarity, and the cops are trying to attack them. We have just heard that the MUA are sending down a contingent. We want anyone who can come down to protest in solidarity with us, stand against the police brutality, and refuse to allow this attack on our right to protest. That is from Jade Escores, who's the queer officer at the NUA. Now, obviously, that's not verifiable because we don't have anyone down there. But that's the latest message we've got from inside the barricades. Now, we are attempting at the moment to get hold of Norman Radican from Alzheimer's Australia, because Alzheimer's is a growing epidemic affecting our community as much as any other, yet the needs of GLBTI dementia sufferers can present special challenges to carers. And something that Alzheimer's Australia in South Australia, unlike in other parts of the country, has recognised and is doing something about. Now, we don't seem to have Norman just yet, so Steve.
Interesting topic. I was reading a paper Heather Birch gave to the Alzheimer's conference in 2009, where she made the point that dementia may mean a reduction in the ability to conceal and self-censor behaviour and information disclosure. So there are all sorts of interesting privacy issues come up for people.
Yeah, I mean, Alzheimer's SA has been very proactive, not just because of Norman, but because of the good team they have over there. It all started with that publication from Heather, and then various other people, Ian Purcell, Jenny Scott, and so on, were involved in getting it going. And the manager there apparently is also very sympathetic. So it just goes to show you need your straight allies along the way as well. Now, this issue of Alzheimer's GLBTI people in old age is particularly distressing. As I think I mentioned in my introduction, there have been cases in the past where people who have transitioned in the course of their life, many, 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 many years ago. But, of course, we know that the way Alzheimer's works is it gradually strips away the more recent memories and people regress further and further back. And it can be that they regress back to the point where they've forgotten that they've transitioned. And that can be really, really distressing for them. Anyway, joining us on the line now, we have Norman Radican from Alzheimer's SA. Hello, Norman. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, tell us a little bit about your outreach project for GLBTI with dementia.
Okay. It is unique. South Australia is the only state who have been funded to look at the issue of dementia within the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and intersex communities. The funding is from the Department of Health and Ageing through a program they call the National Dementia Support Program for People with Special Needs. And it's about, I guess, basically it's about discerning where the idea of dementia sits with our communities, and how we position that into the bigger picture issue of ageing, which I think we're only beginning to look at.
Yeah, well, we've just been talking to Warren Talbot from the Health Alliance about the round table. I gather you were there as well.
I was indeed, yep.
And about the sort of getting recognition for the specific needs of GLBTI seniors. That must be doubly difficult when the seniors in question have dementia as well and may not be as good at communicating their needs.
That's correct. I mean, one of the issues we face is the fact that many of the of our elders, people who are 65 and above, have often spent much of their life in that invisible closet sort of thing, not willing to come out and be out and proud and active, so that their lives have been very quiet and they don't often talk about these sort of things. So locating them initially, and there is another group too, of course, of the out and prouds like myself, but it's the people who've lived these very quiet suburban lives. Mm. And determining where that whole concept is for them, a lot of it is around their own fear, and the fear, of course, has some basis in reality, but some of it is just a perception. We need to understand where people are, how they feel about accessing services that may be useful to them. They, of course, have experienced lots of stigma and discrimination in their lives, and people with dementia also experience a lot of stigma and discrimination in their lives.
Yes,
it's that double whammy.
Yeah, it's a multi-layer problem, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I want to bring Steve Dow in here. Steve?
Norman, we were just talking before about Heather Birch's report, Dementia, Lesbians and Gay Men, and there was an anecdote in that report that was fascinating. She said when an outreach worker from the Victorian AIDS Council was visiting an aged care facility, one of the staff told her, "We have another man here who used to be gay." I mean, is there this misapprehension, particularly with GLBTI seniors, that they magically lose their sexuality with age and with dementia?
Absolutely. And I'm sorry to say that happens across the board, not just with people who are gay and lesbian, but anyone who reaches that magic age of 65 plus. The assumption by services is that people are no longer sexual or have needs to express their sexuality or intimacy. So again, it's an endemic sort of thing that happens, particularly if you look at sort of aged care residential services. You leave your sexuality at the door because people can't deal with it. It's very confronting for them. I've been to workshops where they're trying to deal with sexuality, and the word inappropriate gets used a lot. And I'm going, what does that mean? Who's it inappropriate for? And that's in reference to heterosexual sexuality. When you begin to expand that to other sexualities and other genders, that becomes even more complex in terms of how we're able or not able to deal with that stuff.
Well, this is rather different to in this country to what I experienced when I lived in Holland, for example, because there was an aged care facility not too far from where I lived, and I got to know some of the residents there because they used to come out to the gay bars.
Yes, and that is very different.
Which was very different from what you'd expect over here. Not only that, but the people who ran the aged care home had a special arrangement with the local house with boys, and the residents got a discount.
Wow, that's pretty radical.
Now, that's kind of different to what we have here, isn't it?
We need that here, I think.
I think so.
Well, if I'm supposed to stop having sex in 4 years' time, we definitely do. Yes,
exactly. Although I'm 64, and I keep telling the people that I work with, if I should ever, God forbid, have to go into a care facility, I'm still going to be having sex. I'm going to invite my boyfriend around.
Now, let's talk specifically about Alzheimer's, though. I mean, what special challenges are there in caring for gay and lesbian seniors with Alzheimer's?
I think the difficulty is based on, of course, the lack of memory. So that people who, and it requires an understanding of people's social and cultural history, how they've lived their lives. One of the questions I do use to start this conversation is, who will I be when I get dementia? As we said, many older people in our country have lived fairly closeted lives. Many of them have assumed a heterosexuality in the way they live. Many have been married, had children. I have a lovely friend who has 8 children and is now a lesbian. And you think, who will you be? You know, when you get dementia, who will you be? Because our memories regress back to our sort of 20s and 30s. And it creates a conversation that's very difficult to answer because we don't know yet. There's not enough evidence for us to actually say what's going to happen. Or another example, a man who he never identified as gay. He never, in fact, had any sexual experience with other men, but had somewhere that longing and desire. And when he developed dementia and began to...
He became disinhibited, basically.
Absolutely. And the staff at the residence kept finding him in bed with other men. And he wasn't even sure why he was doing that. Just that his somewhere was lurking that desire that he'd never actually been able to express. So there's many, many issues around that. And again, I think that sense of stigma that we've experienced, and people with dementia also experience. So it's that double layered mm-hmm. effect of what's going to happen to people.
But Norman, how do you decide who maintains privacy for such people? I mean, how do you work that one out? That's tricky. Well,
it is very tricky. I mean, one of the issues is that, of course, people themselves, if someone needs to access community services, for example, through the HAC program, where you have an unknown person coming into your home, and for many people that whole idea that home has been their safe place, their haven, the place to be themselves, when you start to invite other people in that you don't know. And many people who work in aged care are also from other cultures, so they bring in their own sort of sense of culture and attitudes about homosexuality. Do you come out to them? Do you let them know? Do you change your house? Do you move things around so they don't know? Mm. Or do you blatantly say, and then fear, again, that risk of how are you going to be treated? It's a very, very delicate issue, I think.
It is indeed. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Norman.
That's all right.
And good luck with your project going forward.
Thank you very much. Okay. Bye.
Now, our elders are not the only forgotten ones in much of the current community debate. We also forget that in other former British colonies, members like us of the Commonwealth, harsh laws criminalising our lives and loves remain in place. Not only do they make the lives of our brothers and sisters difficult, they make it much harder to tackle the spread of HIV. There's a push on to make this a major topic of discussion at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Perth. That's next weekend, 28th to 30th of October. This has been backed by Michael Kirby and also by Foreign Minister Kevin Rudd. Stay with us as we speak with Rob Lake of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations, who will be there at Chogham, and join in with us on the Rainbow Report. Here's how.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.